You're listening to the Shabby Road Record Show. This is Eddie Ojeda from Twisted Sister. Keep listening and keep rocking. Drop that needle.
Record show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Who likes rock and roll? Yeah!
Abbey Road. Record show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
Oh, how I love the boards. Maybe our best intro record ever. What is this?
This is, wow, this is from the Mott collection. It is a soundtrack to the original motion picture. It came out in 1969. Anthony Newley in Can Hieronymus Merkin Ever Forget Mercy Hump and Find True Happiness?
Oh, God.
Pretty interesting. Playboy magazine says it's the motion picture Playboy magazine called the zany erotobiography that looks like a Marx Brothers movie shot in a nudist camp.
Well,
that's
okay.
A bit randy, a bit chod, a bit booty, don't you think? Starring Anthony Newley, so. Like I said. Georgie Jessel's in this. Georgie, we hardly know you. Joan Collins and Playmate of the Year, 1969, Connie Kresge. Imagine she's dropping some serious trow in this thing, too. I might have to bring this into the old masturbatorium and give it a whack. Right?
If you say so.
Yeah. Anthony Newley. So what do we know about Anthony Newley really quick before we get started?
Well, David Bowie, you know, you read his biography, too. David Bowie claims he modeled his singing style, delivery, and cadence and inflection after his hero, Anthony Newley. So you can really hear a lot of Bowie in the vocals in here, you know?
Yeah, we listened to some of the other tracks on the record, too, and we're like, oh, yeah, you can totally hear Bowie in that,
the
right?
The Berlin era where he's real melancholy and just fucked up on heroin.
Totally.
And,
you know? Partying with Iggy Pop.
Yeah, oi, oi, oi.
All right, well, let's get started, yeah?
Yeah, let's do that.
Hey, Lava.
Hey, Lava. Oops, shit, Lava.
Whoa, excited.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Shab. The mystery boxes are loaded with some classic vinyl, so it's time for another Shabby Road Record Show, the hipster-free vinyl podcast. No hipsters here looking down their noses at you and your records that you've picked out. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and being of sound mind and sound body, I hereby bequeath to you A.D. Adams.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be down here at the Shabby Road Rub and Tug, where the happy never ends. Woo! We got a packed house down here. Episode 73, look at us go.
73,
old
wow.
Geezers.
Geezers that we... Well, let's start by welcoming a very special guest who's going to sit in with the show tonight, and that is the beautiful and talented singer for not only Louis Prima Jr. and The Witnesses, but the Brian Setzer Orchestra. Please welcome to a microphone, Leslie Spencer.
Hello! Well, she's in the Anthony Newley spirit. Have you been on the boards?
I have, and the Candyman can.
The Candyman did, honey. Whoa.
He did, very often.
So, Leslie, what brings you here, darling?
Well,
you sound like Aunt B.
You sound like Mrs. Doubtfire. Hello! I just got off a plane from New York City.
Oh, you're very famous.
I'm so famous. So famous you've heard of me.
How metropolitan.
I'm here for a show tomorrow night in some retirement home.
Yes.
I'll be stripping.
Hey, you're going to be playing the role of Polyester Poontang.
That is correct.
Yes. Yeah, some of the characters in that, Hieronymus Merkin, are just great. Some of the names. Mercy Hump.
Oh, jeez. I've had a few of those in my day.
Good time, Eddie Filth. Sounds like characters around here tonight,
yeah,
right here.
No shit. Well, welcome, Leslie. She's going to sit in and sort of joke around with us as we unsheath these records one by one.
Please just unsheath the records and nothing else.
Nothing else, no.
Ooh, you never know.
And let's welcome Ricky Serrano, of course, is running the controls. Our, somewhat of our leader. I guess if we had a leader here, it would be Ricky, because he's the one that could just press stop.
I would say babysitter is more, yeah, more
that's
apropos.
True. And he's brought with him the cantankerous old sod, Mr. Hal 5000.
Morning, dickhead.
Good morning, Hal.
Hey, Hal.
Spirited
nice to see
us, ooh, as
yeah,
always.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And sitting on the Astrovan bench seat on my side of the room is G-Man, Gary Gilson.
Gary Gilson. Giving him the horns. He comes over here the other night. He goes, what are you doing? I go, nothing. So we have a couple of brews, and he goes, let's go see Foghat and Blue Oyster Cult.
Shit.
For free, and we did. It was awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
You guys were just on acid. You thought it was 1974?
It was 1974 in my head. It was 1974.
Oh,
an oldie. Yeah.
That drops an oldie bit of goldie.
Nice.
And oh, Gary, by the way, is I haven't done the tallies yet, but him and Steven Seaborg are neck and neck on that Enabler Award coming up just around the corner in the Shabby Awards.
And Gary brought beer the other night, too, unofficially for this show. So
he brought me wine.
Ooh, that counts for extra stuff, I think, doesn't it?
Oh, he wins. Just take your trophy.
He brought wine and a wine opener.
These awards are fixed.
That's thinking ahead. That's like a Boy Scout thing right there.
Yeah.
And he brought rope, too, and duct tape. And
lie.
Yeah. And a wood chipper.
So,
Gary. Oh, don't you know, the embargo.
Thinks of everything.
Wood chippers.
So, the Shabby Awards are just around the corner, AD. We're going to be recording that in just a few weeks. So go to our website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, and click on the banner that says vote or the tab that says vote. And you can cast your votes for different categories. And your vote counts. You're part of the Shabby Academy, just like everybody in this room. So please stop by. There's like 7 categories out or something like that by the time you hear this.
Who's the guy that said, I don't want to be a member of any club that would have me?
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of... Oof.
Sam.
And we've also got Jimmy Durden.
Yes, bravo.
Jimmy NASA over there.
He's got
more electronic gear than...
He's got two iPads, an iPod, an iPhone, an iMac.
And he's floating around the room in a drone.
And he's syncing them all up with an iWatch. And he's got a Nintendo 64 and a Commodore 64.
Yes.
And a VIC-20.
And an old Royal typewriter just to keep it real.
Yeah. Well, who do you got on your side of the room?
Oh, my God. There's a crowd here. Right in back of me, we got my buddy Robert Perez is here for what? You've been here for a couple episodes. And nice to see you. An old friend of mine from the East Coast is now living here in Phoenix, Arizona. As a matter of fact, I believe he's romantically attached to our luscious Liz. I don't know, man. So Mark Brooks is here, man. Dude, we had some shenanigans once upon a time back in the day, from way back in the 80s, 70s maybe, late 70s, I've known this guy.
Wow.
So he played in a band back then. We played in a band. We all did our thing and stumbled over each other now and then. It's like, oh, you, let's drink, you know. And here we are, man, all these decades later. And, of course, it's Liz's birthday.
Yes.
It's our Liquid Mistress's birthday. She's 29.
29 and holding.
Yep. In a holding pattern. Oh, there goes Jimmy.
Happy happy birthday, Liz.
Happy birthday.
Can't think of a better way to celebrate than to do a Shabby Road Record show, right?
Right
so,
on, man.
And thank you guys for tuning in. Again, this is episode number 73.
Oy.
Thanks for sharing everything on Facebook and visiting our website, Shabby Road Record Show, where you can buy some beer. And that's just what has happened tonight. There's beer at Shabby Road.
No. So, unacceptable. Who's responsible for that mess?
Scott. I might mess up his last name. Scott Guerin, I'm going to say. And he's from New South Wales, Australia.
What?
No.
Crikey.
No.
Right on.
He got us a couple of tall boys by visiting our website. There's a little PayPal link that you could use and donate beer for the fridge here. And he's done that. So we got some Fosters.
A couple of Fosters.
That's great.
Lagers.
Australian.
Fosters lagers.
Australian for beer.
Yeah, man. Wow. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Scott. We appreciate that. And
nice to meet you, too. Yeah, right?
No kidding, right?
Yeah, good shout-out.
All right, well, you know the drill, AD. We've got the mystery boxes with three vinyl records each. Nobody knows what's inside except for the owner of said mystery box. And
right here, buddy.
Oh, what you got? What's it looking like tonight?
It's pretty good. I got some interesting shit. I'm still picking from the Seaborg collection. The season of Seaborg is still in full swing. Of course, our friend Steven Seaborg donated damn near 400 albums to the Shabby Road Record Show. So we divvied them up, we duked it out, and we picked the ones we wanted. And I'm still picking my selections all month from Stevens. I blend them next week. Next week is they go into the main event there. So with the old Mott Records, with my records. But I've got three pretty good selections. I got one European metal band. Let's call it Krautrock, if we will, from 1972. Krautrock, 72. Go figure that, right?
Interesting. Okay.
I've got UK glam at its finest, 1973. Uh-huh. And I've got, it's funny because I've got a UK artist and a German artist. And my third pick is a band made of Germans with a British lead singer. It's kind of interesting. I got a cool little blend of Germans and Britons, and see if we can't start a war
Sounds
here.
Sounds familiar, the German thing with a British lead singer. Like, you've brought them before, yes?
Yes.
Okay, who was that?
I'll let you know. BJ Cramp's already going, oh, pick me, Mr. Carter.
Yeah, so I did the same thing. The Steven Seaborg collection, two of the three out of my mystery box are from that collection. I just got a bunch of great power pop tonight.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. I
got 1980, 1983, and 1977.
Now, I'm running a risk. I'm sort of rolling the dice tonight. One of my picks, I'm telling you, it's in the last 30 bars, 32 bars of the song. It might skip, so I might be drinking.
Okay.
But
that's the rule.
I know,
the rule? I don't know the rule.
Oh, if my record skips, you drink.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going to need some wine.
Yes, I am.
So you know how there's two different turntables down here. Sometimes it'll skip on one and not on the other. I've got my fingers crossed.
Okay.
I think we can get through this.
Well, there's nothing left to do except for decide who's going to go first, and that's decided with Ricky Serrano. He's got the two playing cards, red and a black, behind his back. AD is red. I am black. It's one in each hand. And let's make our super special guest, well, they're all super special, but one came from New York. So, Leslie Spencer, can you just say left or right?
This has nothing to do with the Iowa caucuses, left.
I don't know what that means, but red.
Oh, well, that would be me.
That's you. I didn't realize you were so political.
Yeah. I'm not. I know. I just was at the airport and I heard something on the news. I was like, oh, there's an election going on this year. Okay,
yeah,
great.
President or something.
Well, I don't really know where to start. I could start with something deep and brooding and cool and heavy, or I could start with something just so insane. And this might be the way to start. I think I'm going to start with this, and this will be a fun one to start with, I think. This selection, it originally came out in 1973. Now, the album that I have is a sort of greatest hits compilation, came out on CBS Records in 1984. I should pull it out. It's a song called I'm the Leader of the Gang I Am.
What?
I'm the leader of the gang I am.
Do that in a British accent.
I'm the leader of the gang I am.
Thank you.
And it originally came out on Gary Glitter's album, The Leader.
Yes.
Oh, there he
Look
is.
Look at his face.
This song was a number one hit.
Wait a minute.
Right? This song was a number one hit for the Lord of the Flies of Little Boys.
He looks like a Klingon.
Lord of the Flies of Little Boys.
Yes. In the UK, it came out, like I said, it came out earlier in 73. Spent 4 weeks at number one on the singles chart. Now, listen, Gary Glitter.
Oh, wow. Look at the
back. I think, right? How cool is that guy?
Can I interrupt you and say that the song after I'm the Leader of the Gang I Am is Do You Want to Touch Me?
Now,
oh, I love that.
That
song.
Is a Joan Jett did the remake. Do okay. You Want to Touch? That's Gary Glitter originally.
Okay, so. But have we noticed his outfit on the back?
According to my research, Gary Glitter has over 50 glitter suits and over 100 pair of stacked glitter.
Are they all onesies?
Shoes. I think most of them are, yes, and most of them are jumpsuits.
That's a onesie.
It's a, yeah, right. That's right. We call them onesies.
It's a singlet.
A singlet. And according to his behavior, I'm guessing there's a trap door in the back area.
Hey,
which now. I think easy. You can see.
No, the thing is, now a lot of people are familiar with Gary Glitter's story. Now, the thing is, sort of a great British glam icon gone bad. This guy was in the meat of it all, like when Slade, the Sweet, T-Rex, Jordy, Suzy Quatro were doing all their glam stuff, when glam was slamming the charts in the UK in the early 70s, 71, 72, 73, 74. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Mott the Hoople doing their thing. So Gary Glitter was kind of the king of it all. He was sort of the pride of Great Britain, man. He was a TV icon. He was doing all kinds of appearances everywhere. I mean, he started, you know, really young. He came out in the 60s as a I think he did his first single. He was 15 years old, right? And just within weeks, he signed his first little single coming out. He signed with Parlophone and was working with George Martin in like 65.
Wow.
So, right, I mean, here's it. Now he's 16 years old, working with George Martin. Great deal at Parlophone. So he's cranking out all this stuff. I mean, but I'll get to the rest of the story later. A lot of you know the story. To back it up a little bit, though, he also had a hit with this song. The song's I'm the Leader of the Gang. This song also had a hit. With American rockers, one of my favorites, Brownsville Station.
Oh, really?
Yep, wow. Yep.
Love that band.
Yep, Cashbox 100 went to number 48 on Billboard 100. So, also, Ryan,
yes.
You played Girls' School last week, right?
I did.
He did some recording.
Or the week before.
Yeah, he re-recorded this song with Girls' School in 1986.
Really?
Right? It didn't chart in the UK, but it did go to number 12 in our special friends, Australia.
Hey!
Right?
Awesome.
Right? What's his name?
It's Scott.
You,
Scott. So Scott, yeah. So thank you for helping Girls' School and Gary Glitter get the charts. And in 1993, he did another version by Kenmore, New York, which is the Buffalo, Niagara Falls, comedy rockers Green Jelly or Green Jello.
Oh, yeah. They did Little Pig, Let Me In.
Right. That was their hit. But they did a cover of this song. But it featured World Wrestling Federation superstar Hulk Hogan on the lead vocals. So
let me tell you something,
so
brother.
Yes. Gary Glitter hit...
It's a great experience.
Yeah, and this went to the UK top 40. So Gary Glitter hit the top 40 with this song on five different occasions.
Wow.
And it's a great song. You'll recognize it. You know the song. It's just one of those singable anthems that is so fantastic. Now, he's actually gone by a few names. He was born Paul Francis Gadd in 1944 in Banbury, Oxfordshire, England, UK, Europe.
That's right.
Earth. he also used other names in his career. Paul Raven, Paul Monday, Paul Russell. And he
Paul
also
Stanley.
Used, yeah, he used
an
the name.
Identity crisis?
He used the name Rubber Bucket.
All right.
Like rub his bucket. Right?
Okay. So,
Rubber Bucket, you're the one. In the menace.
Come see my rubber bucket.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so... So, you know, I mean, so he changed his name, and all of a sudden he arrives at Gary Glitter. Now, he had been going through the alphabet. This is 1971. He's looking to jump into that fray of the glam thing.
Just kicking off in the UK, yeah.
So, and he wanted, like, bookended letters like Zig Ziglar or, mm-hmm. you know, Stanley Sparkle was one of his names he rejected, right? He was going to be Terry Tinsel. Nah, it didn't work. Vicky Vomit was up, actually, one of the, right? So he settled on Gary Glitter. I thought of a few for him.
Okay. What'd you
Tommy
got?
Touch Me.
Tommy.
Freddie Felcher.
Oh, God.
Or Dickie Diddler.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
none.
If you don't
well
know.
Well done, sir.
Thank you. If you don't know what I'm alluding, and of course, his most famous hit was Rock and Roll Part 2. Da 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 da. Hey, and a lot of football teams and basketball teams. Yep. It's the fight song. It's the hey song, as they call it.
I used to use that in my spin class. I'm really contributing, you guys.
The perfect number.
Totally.
So he actually put those songs out simultaneously, part one and part two. One was side A, side B. One was the same song. The other had vocals. So it's the same thing, one instrumental. Mm-hmm. But part two, with no vocals, happened to be the biggest hit because I guess it was more marketable and usable.
Right.
So how does that make you feel as a singer?
Right.
I'm going to go with the one where you don't sing on, Gary.
But it's pretty interesting, though, how he had one single on the charts.
Freddie Felcher.
Dear Freddie.
Freddie Finger.
Yeah. Rejected.
Freddie Fister. So
Sonny Fister?
So. How about like Mike Masturbator?
But it's odd that you would have two simultaneously hits, an A side and a B side. I think George Harrison might have done that with one of his post Beatles, like My Sweet Lord and something, when another one.
Boland did that a lot.
Yeah, like simultaneous hits.
Double A
yeah.
size?
Yeah.
Side?
It was pretty interesting, though. Needless to say, this guy has sold a shit ton of records worldwide. And not only that, just the rights and the licensing. Really, he had a band, but the recordings were done by he and the producer, Mike Leander. And they wrote it and played all the instruments and sang. So they were making the money. I mean, this dude had some cash. But in 1997, he was arrested and subsequently convicted of possessing child pornography. And that, obviously sent his career into a spiral, I guess, something. They frown upon that.
They should.
Yes, in some places.
Who would have thought that guy pictured here
also,
would be up to some nefarious activity?
That's a normal bloke, I would say.
Yeah, there's nothing
wrong
with
popsicles?
Him.
Yeah.
But he was also arrested for having sexual relations with a minor. He was also arrested in Vietnam and convicted for obscene offenses with a minor in 2006.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you need to come on down to the cellar. I got a whole freezer full of popsicles.
And then, you have one or two popsicles.
Yeah.
And you find out you shouldn't probably have some popsicles in the cellar. So in 2012, he was arrested again for sex offenses with a minor, including being found guilty of attempted rape, four counts of indecent sexual assault, and having sexual relations with a girl under 13, which would mean, I'm guessing, 12.
Ted Nugent, anyway?
Yes.
Yeah, right?
Not even Ted was so bold.
So finally, he was sentenced to all this, but he always got out on technicalities or like probation, good behavior. He was Gary Glitter. It's Gary Glitter. He's good.
Right?
Rock and roll. Hey, Judge,
They play the song as he's led into the courtroom.
The jury going, hey!
Please tell me that in England they wear, in America they wear the orange jumpsuits. Well, this album cover looks like he's wearing a jumpsuit, but it's just
how apropos,
magnetic
the future,
blue.
Yeah. Picking up trash by the side of the road. An old ball and chain on his ankle, and he's picking up your cigarette butts, right?
I'm the typical girl commenting on the fashion.
That's good. That's good. We need that in our
show. It should be described, though. It does seem
sorely lacking.
And of course, his way pompadour.
Pompadour. But he also, he has some sort of Klingon thing going with his forehead, which could have been corrected with makeup or maybe enhanced with makeup. I don't know.
Yeah, wow.
Perhaps a sloped brown.
Is that how
Yeah, but so anyway. finally in 2015, some judge said, Mr. Glitter, enough, and sentenced him to 16 years in the pokey. And we're not talking about Gumby here, you know what I'm saying? Woo, what happens in the pokey.
Easy, man.
So 16 years now, he's 71 years old, so he's going to be out and ready to party balls in 2013 at the Randy Raw age of 87 years young.
But it's 2016.
Oh, so, okay.
He's
so
been out for 3 years.
No, 2015. No. Oh, I'm sorry, 2031.
Oh,
so that's 16 years.
Oh.
Yeah, 16 years from now.
Okay. Can't even
so from 20, he was convicted in 2015. Okay. 16 years means he's eligible to get out in 2013. which will put him at 87 years old.
But
if he survives the ass reconstruction surgery.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, let's just rock. This is a ruckus little number. Now, I might have to drink at the end of this. This is a great, great number. You'll recognize this. It's a great one. It's called I'm the Leader of the Gang I Am.
All right. I'll put it on.
It's side one, track five. This is Gary Glitter and Mike Leander's awesome rock and ruckus number, man. This is a cool tune. Party tune. And you know Gary Glitter parties. Wink, wink.
That's not the kind of party.
Party, Gary Glitter party.
Really? Well,
I guess that skipped.
It's all right. Boy.
You're going to have a fucking beer!
I guess I'm drinking. Yeah. Here's to that. Liz
got... Cheers.
Wow, that was fast. There's a fireball right here, like, within seconds.
Hey, it's her birthday. She can do what she wants.
Good Lord. Yeah. Well, I guess I'm drinking. Here's to Gary Glitter. The man who put the bang in gang, Mr. Gary Glitter, wow. Lord of the Little Boys Flies. Wow. Gary Glitter, that was 1973's I'm the Leader of the Gang I Am.
Mommy.
Oh, my God. I only, let's move on, shall
Here's
we?
Here's to that. Here's to that.
Okay, faggot, what's next?
Damn it. Why does he always use that drop right before I go? That ain't right. That ain't right at all.
Jesus, how many, how many shots was that?
How delicious.
Waiter.
Where this is going. Waiter.
Waiter. All right. Well, let's play some Cheap Trick.
Oh.
Hey, Cheap Trick.
Oh, look at you brought.
Oh.
This is from the Seaboard Collection.
I know Ricky's a big Cheap Trick fan, mm-hmm. right? Have you heard this record? This is Next Position, Please.
It's a good record.
Pass that on over to AD there. Yeah, this is a great record. Comes out in 1983, so a little bit past Cheap Trick's heyday, right, of the late 70s. That's when they were really, really going.
Yep.
This album's produced by Todd Rundgren, mm-hmm. which gets high marks for me just based on that, because I'm a big Todd Rundgren fan, and he does a really good job producing this record. It's surprisingly one of Cheap Trick's best albums.
I was going to say, really? You know, it's one of their little kind of sleeper records.
Right, yeah. I would put it on par with Heaven Tonight and The Dream Police and everything else.
Yeah, in color.
Which album did they have Mighty Wings on? Because my piano student, sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
But the other day my piano student was like, I really want to play that song that Tom Cruise starts to sing in Top Gun. And this kid's 12, right?
Wow.
He's like, it's a Cheap Trick song. Like, I had to Google it because I don't listen to the Top Gun album, you know?
No.
The motion picture.
I didn't know there was a Cheap Trick
Mighty
song
Wings.
On the Top Gun
no,
album.
No, he starts to sing it apparently in this karaoke setting. And
oh, okay. Go. So, interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Somebody can answer that that's listening. Please. I have no idea.
But my 12-year-old, I was very proud.
That's yeah. cool.
I was like, I want to play that song. I said, no, we're going to do Beethoven. No, I actually didn't.
No, we're going to do Anthony Newley.
That's true. Yeah. We're going to do some Gary Glitter.
Yeah, come on, come on.
That means something totally different with a 12-year-old.
Oh, no.
Easy.
No.
We're going to do a song about sausages.
No. Okay. No.
So now, again, this is one of their best records, I think, and it's full of great hooks. And like I said, Todd does a great job in producing the album. You know, in late 82 into 83 is when they're doing this. And, you know, he does a good job in not having it being marred in this 80s production and stuff.
Right,
because
yeah.
a lot of the, especially the 70s bands, they transitioned into the 80s. And then, like your Molly Hatchet from last week, it was like, here comes the synthesizers and
gated snare drum. Yeah. And yeah.
There really isn't a lot to be found on this particular record. There's not a lot of that telltale 80s production that really makes it sound dated. You know, it's not really present on this record. And I think this album just crackles with life. It sounds like they're really having a good time recording this album, too.
I like what Rundgren did with it, like he did with the Dolls. He kind of saw it into the future and made the production kind of tarted it up and didn't make it mm-hmm. current and well, they're a punk band, so he didn't make it punk. He made it a good record and yeah. overlooked all the trends. And right. Rundgren's a great producer in that aspect, I think.
Yeah, and some people say that it's very reminiscent of Todd Rundgren's Utopia records from this period. Like there's a record called Oops, Wrong Planet.
Right, yeah.
that they did, which I'm not really familiar with, so I can't really say that that's the case. But that's what it's often compared to in terms of production. The cover is interesting, as Leslie's taking a look at it right now.
I love the fashion.
83,
really,
baby.
I'm really loving his suspenders. And his, I think they might be corduroy.
This is turning into like the Joan Rivers show. Yeah. That, yeah.
Oh, honey. Oh. There's a stain. There's a stain on your Mackie.
So this cover is actually a parody of Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run album cover.
Yes.
The same photograph. If you look at him. If you think of the Springsteen one,
if you look, oh yeah, okay,
right, and it even goes on to the back.
Dude, I never even noticed that.
If you look at,
I never even noticed.
Look
that.
At Rick Nielsen's fingers. He is holding up three fingers. His left hand, and if you look closely, he's holding up half of his pinky as well, and his right hand is open completely, exposing all of his fingers. So in total, Rick is holding up 8 1/2 fingers, and this is Cheap Trick's 8 1/2 album. With the pinky finger representing the EP that you brought in, Found All the Parts.
Oh, no kidding. Really?
Yeah.
Really
the original.
Really adorable that you noticed that detail.
I know.
I'm really proud of you.
Thanks. So, yeah, this album was actually going to originally be called 8 1/2. But Gary Glitter already used it.
you know my face.
I'll
too
see
well
myself
right
out.
Mamie.
I was going to let you run with that all night, buddy.
Yeah, you know, one of us is going to jump on
you
that.
You betcha.
The record label had to go and stick its nose in this project. And what I read is that they wanted Cheap Trick to do a cover of The Motors' Dance the Night Away, which they did at the end of side one there.
Mm-hmm.
And Rundgren was like, fuck you. I'm not even producing that.
maybe it came after their work was completed. And Rundgren's like, I'm not coming back in to do one song. Screw you, man.
Now, part of their signature sound, I think, is I don't want to say lost. It's just different because you don't have Tom Petersen on this record.
Correct.
To say sans Tom Petersen album. He was known for the 8-string, 12-string basses and things like that. So there's a lot more direct punch on the bottom end as far as this record goes, too.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of the things that makes it hold up good and not fall into that sort of 80s trap is Bunny Carlos. He's got such a great pocket and a great feel, because usually when you think of 80s and the thing about the 80s that sort of turns you off is just how robotic it all seemed sometimes.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, you could have done it on a Lindrum machine, right?
Yeah. So, and Bunny doesn't really have that. He's got that great pocket, that huge pocket where just swings, man, no matter what. Even if he's playing straight eights, it feels like it's just kind of swinging.
Bunny Carlos and Ringo and Don Powell, to me, go in the same little group of drummers.
Yeah.
That, you know, that Don Powell from Slade, of course, if you Slade, if you're not familiar with that driving chuka-chaka, they can play it straight, they can swing it a little bit and stagger it, but it's real stripped down and simple. But that kind of beat is hard to play. It sounds really simple, but it's not easy to play. It's not easy to get away with, I should say, as a drummer. You really have to have that feel to be able to do it. It's not like gymnastics, but Bunny's one of my favorite drummers in that aspect too, man.
Right, yeah. And so the label sticks their nose into it, and then they also liked a song called You Say Jump and demanded that be on the record, despite it being a throwaway and Cheap Trick's eyes. Mm-hmm. They were like, this one's not really working. And the label's like, no, that should go on it, and also you should cover The Motors Dance the Night Away.
Were they still on Epic at the time?
Yes.
Okay.
So on the back of the inner sleeve there, you see also available on cassette with two bonus tracks, and those two bonus tracks are the ones that Cheap Trick wanted on the record originally, and they wound up as bonus tracks on the cassette, which is odd. Like, why would you, like, hey, buy the cassette, it's got bonus tracks?
Well,
on
because
it?
You could put more songs on tape than you could on vinyl and keep
course.
The sonic quality.
Duh.
Yeah,
but it just seemed weird. Like, I get there's more stuff on CDs when those came out or something to get buyers to buy the CD or something.
Oh, sure, man. Like, buy the, you know, you want to sell as much merch as possible. Buy any medium. Buy any medium. Sell every disc. I mean, fucking sell every tune, man. So they, you know, and they're going, I mean, when you bought cassettes, you know, you'd have like 3-4 minutes of empty.
Right, yeah.
At the end of the last song, they're like, dude, we got 4 minutes of tape left.
Or they would change the
on side
sequence.
A, sure.
Yeah.
So throw another tune on there.
So
why
Cheap
not?
Trick did finally rectify all of this in the 2000s with a reissued version of it, which was the original Cheap Trick desired songs and order. And the two songs that the label wanted, that Motors song and the other one, were bonus tracks now. Like,
really?
Whatever.
Wow.
Everybody already has the record anyway that's going
to
buy it.
Cheers to that.
Cheers. You know. So I chose to play a song on side two called Won't Take No for an Answer, because I think it exemplifies the whole thing about it being a great record in the 80s but doesn't really have a big 80s production thing, and it shows how great a job Todd Rundgren did on this record for Cheap Trick. It's a great song, and it's got a huge great hook in the chorus, which in the middle of the song, sort of the middle eight, although that's way longer than eight, it sort of like goes into a halftime thing with the hook of the chorus going on, and then the way they come out of that halftime part back into the chorus is really cool. So I don't know how familiar you are with this song, but
I mean, I know the song, yeah, but yeah, well, that's the beauty of that drummer who can push and pull that. He can sell the chorus at halftime or quarter time, you know?
Right, right.
And strong chorus will do that. You can sing it anyway, you know, by Anthony Newley.
All right, AD, well, here you go. Why don't you pop that on, and we will check out from Cheap Trick from the next
position. Pop that on.
From the Next Position, Please record. Of course, on Epic, who tried to screw this record up as best they could, but
don't
failed.
Don't screw the record up.
August of 1983. won't take no for an answer, which Gary Glitter did as well.
I was going to make that joke, but I think my mom might listen to this, so I wouldn't.
She turned it off 20 minutes ago.
She turned it off 30 years ago. What are you talking about?
Yeah, won't take no for an answer.
What fuck?
From Cheap Trick. My goodness. He was dancing.
I gotta put my shirt back on.
No, leave it off. Leave it off.
That's me tweaking my erasers, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. Just pull out a record from your mystery box.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. Okay, so I think I want to do. I was going to start the show with this one. This was going to be my pick number one, but it's now my pick number two. This was to me one of the prizes of the Seaborg collection.
Okay, is it one that we fought over?
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. We almost did some serious kung fu. I did some kung yu, and you did some kung fu too.
Did, no.
I brought scorpions.
Oh, Lonesome Crow. I already had that. We didn't fight over that. I have it.
Oh, shit, right? Oh, fuck. You're right. You had that.
Mm-hmm.
Which was the one we do go. Never mind.
Won't I love sea scorpions?
If you notice, we do have man titty on the inside.
Oh,
it's
I
a gay fold
up.
Yeah, man, male nudity. Hey. Leslie, you might want to look this one over.
Would. I'm single.
He's German. He's Aryan. He's perfect.
Wow.
He's a cartoon.
Wow. What is. Wow.
So.
If you say so.
This is the Scorpions' very first album. Before they were like, Scorpions, Las Vegas, California! stop.
You can tell by the absence of tattoos and hair.
Yeah, right? Yes. Or he's covered in hair. It's just blonde and silky and almost transparent. He's a perfect man.
He's got raven hair.
Ruby lips. Sparks fly from his fingertips. Thank you. Wow. I think that's an Eagle song. This song is, I'm going to play side two, track two, a song called Action. And this song, you know this song, right?
Oh, I love this song.
Rocks Balls. Produced by Connie Plank. This record came out in February of 72, initially on the Brain album, Brain label out of Europe. And, of course, Billingsgate Records was quick to scoop up bands like this. Mm-hmm. They reissued Jane.
Yep.
They reissued Lucifer's Friend. You
good
know?
Job.
So, you know, Billingsgate was...
friend, Gary Glitter.
Yeah. They released him from jail.
Yes. Action. You know what I'm saying?
Sorry, I'm...
But this album features a 17-year... Well, Gary Glitter. A 17-year-old Michael Schenker.
Yeah, it does. Guitar.
His older brother, Rudy, was playing. He was 23. Klaus Meine, they started the band, and... Michael was kind of a prodigy. So, you know, at age 11 years old, he played his first gig. 11 years old. And Gary Glitter was pantsless in the front row. And, of course, at the meet and greet after the show.
Boy, we are beating that dead horse, aren't we?
Right. Yeah, you know, how can you not? Gary, you son of a bitch. This band was actually formed in 65 in Hanover, Germany. Which is the north central region of Germany, less than 100 miles south of Hamburg. Well, back in that time, remember, Hamburg, Germany was a port city and had a lot of British, UK. I mean, that was a main port. And the Beatles went to Hamburg. I mean, a lot of the right. British bands brought their music down into the port of Hamburg.
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 Please.
And so there was access to the northern region of Germany. That's why a lot of German bands were forming and coming out, because they had that influence, you know, at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, since way back in the Beatle days, there was a lot of exchange there musically and culturally. It was the most, I would say, Americanized, or for lack of a better word, region of Germany, musically speaking. So there was a lot of influence from that country music, the bands from the southern part, you know, South London and south of there, you know, and all that. So there was a lot of exchange of ideas, musically speaking. So, you know, certainly the Scorpions were recipients and took complete advantage of that. This album, being their first, and again, the Scorpions really hit big, I'd say, and really defined their sound. Probably around their fourth album, maybe Virgin Killer album, you know, like Pictured Life. And
for the 70s version, yeah.
Right. You know, of course, until the 80s thing hit. But yeah, I mean, Pictured Life and what were the other
Catch
songs?
Catch Your Train.
Right, Catch Your Train. Backstage Queen was on that record, I think. Yeah. So these guys were hotter than a pistol. Now, they still hadn't, again, defined their sound. They had Wolfgang Joni, DZIONY. 22-year-old little motherfucker on drums. And the only album, remember, they had a different drummer on their first, four or five records.
Until they got Herman.
Until Herman or German came in and kicked ass, right? And that's what really solidified their sound. Now, Franz Buchholz came in, I think, three albums in.
Yeah, it's either Entrance or
a Virgin Killer. Third album. Might have been Entrance, right?
Maybe, yeah.
So... But they were still kind of exploring this prog thing, you know. That, remember, this is 72, so glitter was happening, glam was happening in 72. But these kids were young. They were 20, 22, 23 years old. And Klaus, I have an interview with a portion of an interview with Klaus on this, but they hadn't yet developed their sound. I got it on my phone. Let me call it up here real quick. That's so. Anyway, Klaus was trying to explain.
Wait, that's Klaus and not Hitler? Jeez.
How they arrived at their sound.
He seems very animated.
He. We were happy when Herman joined the band. I think he had a very, very particularly fat groove. So you see what he's saying. And I kind of agree with him. I think that what he had, they had captured but had yet to really corral in. So I think that's what Klaus is trying to say in that soundbite there. But it's funny, though, but Michael Schenker.
Is it still going over? Is Klaus is still yelling?
Wait, that was Gary Glitter.
So let me stop this madness. But this was the first and really the only rapper. I think he made sense. I agree with everyone.
I was following it. Yeah, I was.
But
yeah.
I
took German in
high
school.
It's weird because part of the Seaboard collection, there was a band called Babe Ruth. Remember we were talking about that?
Yeah. I don't know from Babe Ruth, but
a British band had the female lead singer, and I almost picked a Babe Ruth. It was going to be my third pick. I didn't, so I gave that away. But it's funny because the irony there is that Michael Schenker, after doing this record with the Scorps, they went on tour. Scorpions did with UFO, a British band. Now Michael didn't speak a word of English. Ends up filling in for Bernie Madsen for UFO, who was actually himself a replacement guitar player. But because Schenker was so fucking good, they hired Schenker, let both of the guitar players go, the regular guy and Bernie Madsen. Bernie Madsen then went on to form Babe Ruth.
Oh, is that where he's from?
Yeah.
Because he ended up in Whitesnake, Bernie.
Right. So that's kind of this weird. It was almost serendipitous. And I had both records in my hand. I chose something instead of Babe Ruth, and maybe I'll play them next episode.
Is that Mazin or Marsden?
Marsden.
Marsden. Yeah.
Marsden. Did I say? Yeah, it's Marsden.
Yeah.
I can't read my own fucking chicken scratch. I can't read my own German. Scheiß, face, fucking say something.
Wow.
But,
shut the fuck up.
You're angering Hal.
But I'm telling you, this is honestly a must-have for any UFO fan. For any Scorpions fan, I meant. But
I would say UFO fan over Scorpions fan, actually.
The amazing thing is that he's 17 years old and playing like an old blues master on this. I mean, he's not over-shredding yet because I don't think he was just quite that fast, but his understanding of the blues, and again, I think it's the location of the fact that they were just, you know, in that northern region of Germany that had those records. They had access to those records. Mm-hmm. And he could go down to his local record store and pick these things up and learn these muddy waters blues scales and understand that.
Milky Wilson.
Right.
Plus, he's got a big fat Les Paul and Marshall tone on this album.
Yeah. I mean, so it's
Klaus's
it's,
voice is not there yet, though, when you listen.
No, it's not. And that's the thing. That's why I said, you know, they're still finding their thing. And all kidding aside about the interview, I did read an interview. That's what prompted me to do that.
That wasn't real?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it was. Oh, jeez. Cover blown. He was saying, Klaus was saying in an interview at that point in time, he goes, you know, we don't know what we're doing. We're clueless. We're being shaped as we speak. You know, by the producer.
It's an odd thing to put in your promo pack.
Well, I mean, you know, that's an interview. He was being honest, though. This guy, Conrad Plank. he really kind of shaped them. He was the one who really corralled them and started producing them and said, oh, listen, we need to do this the right way. We need to find a sound, and ended up working with them, and ultimately they became Scorpions, you know.
And, that we know and love.
Yeah, and I think it's a must-have record. I think what I like the most about it is that you can hear them. I mean, before they became the Scorpions and put out, and I say this with love and respect, you know, the Ramones put out the same record, quote-unquote, a bunch of times. But if they'd put out a different record, you'd go, they sold out, you know. the old joke that AC/DC says, you know, they put out the same record 15 times. No, we didn't. We did it 16 times.
Yeah.
And Scorpions, you know, once they found their formula, God bless them, they stuck to it. And they sold a fuck ton million of records.
Mm-hmm.
But this is before that. And it really gives you a taste of their influences. not just the results of their production and songwriting prowess and the things that they learned. This is them when they were young and they were raw. And I think this is a really important record. And this is one of my favorite new records in my collection.
So you weren't familiar with it going in?
No. Hadn't heard a note. Not a one note from it. Now, really? I have Fly to the Rainbow. I have their second one.
I believe it's Und Fly to the Rainbow.
I believe it's called... That's the abbreviated title.
And he's still going.
But, turn him off.
Yeah, the Fly to the Rainbow album. But again, you know, Klaus really kind of forms his... Starts to get more melodic on Fly to the Rainbow.
Yeah, it's more song.
Gathering more momentum. Franz Buchholz might have done that record, too. I think Franz might have... Oh, no, Uli Roth joined the band then.
Uli, yes.
Uli, was his debut with the Scorpions. Franz. But anyway, I want to do this. Let's just go ahead and play some Scorpions.
Action. Where is Action on this record?
It's on side two, right? Track two, I think. Wait, yeah, side two, track two.
All right.
So it's Action, or I think the German title is...
Sie wird das Saufen in ihrem eigenen Blut.
And that's Action in German.
I think it said blue.
He said I love you.
Dropping the needle in.
Scorpions.
Action from the Lonesome Crow record. That's the Scorpions. Dude, you know, I think who the star of the fucking show is. I mean, Michael Schenker, he's a kid. He plays great. But, dude, Lothar Heimberg on bass, I think pound for pound on this album is the superstar on this record.
Interesting.
He played his satchel off on this record, man. Serious biz. I mean, and you know what's weird? Did you know that, this record was initially released in Germany as a soundtrack to a German anti-drug film called Das Kalte Paradies?
Really?
That's appropriate.
Wow. Yeah, right? How freaking trippy
is
that?
It sounds like a stoned out record, actually, to me.
Yeah.
But...
And if you know, when you put it on,
it's
we didn't get the song.
Psychology.
I guess
so. We had dropped the mics by then. Yeah, right. Get stoned. I mean, don't get stoned. I mean, well, I don't know.
Backmasking. Do you remember backmasking? Yeah.
Don't get stoned! Las Vegas, California! But the label, there's a black side and a white side. So on the actual label on the disc itself, it's sort of a negative. There's a black on white and then a white on black version if you flip it over side A and side B. But on one side, there's no track listing. On another side, both sides' track listing are on that side.
Yeah.
And that was a fuck up.
I've seen that before on other records, but there's no indication, I don't believe, on that label which one's which.
Yeah, that was a mistake. So the black background with the white Billingsgate is side one, and the black and the white with black logo is side two, and it was just a fuck up. But there's this really kind of weird cryptic where'd it go? This cryptic little saying on the record itself, Billingsgate. Practiced fluency and a variety of profane and obscene abuse, i.e. ass-kicking. And I think that's sort of their little logo, or that's their sort of little saying, like E Pluribus Unum, or...
Kind of like the Shabby Road record show.
Yeah, or like their version of something like... Oh, Hitler, come on. Mein Kampf! Ah, son of a bitch. He's not talking.
Read the other artists on Billingsgate. This is why we mention record labels and stuff, because Billingsgate sounds like a pretty cool label, and it's got all the other artists on the roster.
Yeah, I alluded to it earlier. Also have Lucifer's Friend.
Great.
Jane.
Great.
Right? Epitaph. Great. Heavy fucking shit, right?
Yeah.
And Frumpy. Now, that's something...
I don't know what that is.
That's a German band with a female lead singer.
Oh.
Her name is...
She's
her
frumpy.
Actual last name is Rumpf. R-U-M-P-F.
Oh. Frumpy Rumpf.
But they were in England, so there's the British, right?
Yeah.
And saw a commercial, and the word Frumpy was used. Now, R-U-M-P-F, they took the F and put it at the beginning and heard the word Frumpy, and they started calling the lead singer Frumpy.
Oof.
And so they named the band Frumpy, and that is an album.
And who is
in the Seaboard collection? And,
oh, Frumpy's in there.
Oh, I almost played some of that tonight.
Oh,
too.
Cool! And there's a band called Guru Guru.
Guru Guru, yeah.
I don't know what that is, but I'm like, well, probably pretty cool.
Well, they are the Eggman. Guru Guru.
It makes total sense.
Yeah, right. I think Beatle reference there. That means, can you do that bass track one more time, please?
It's actual.
Lothar? Yeah.
Yeah, them recording that album.
Yeah, yeah, there's actually, yeah. It's on the cassette.
yeah, it's a bonus track.
Scorpions.
All right, well, moving on. I got another power pop song here from, this time, 1980 on EMI. And it's a record actually brought to us by BJ, an extra record that he had in the mystery box that he had for us here, and it's an album by a band called The Scooters.
Oh, that would shouldn't that be in our statutory rape collection there?
Please
comment.
I'm playing a song called Big Brother. And
I have that album, Big Brother, and the album's called what?
Young Girls.
Thank you very much. That's.
I see a theme developing.
It's not good.
This
things
like,
aren't good.
This is,
we should
this
just
is,
not be here tonight.
The little girl that the
and look at the band. Look at they're just checking.
No, she's JonBenet Ramsey.
JonBenet, you're dead
in
to me.
In a kimono with. I don't even know what.
Band members leering at
leering.
Her.
Yes.
Leather-clad band members
and
leering at her
like
in the cover.
Really good-looking for that age band members.
She's thinking the same thing.
No, she's looking at her mom or something. I don't
know. Help. Why did you sign me up for this?
But she has an engagement ring on. I don't get it. I don't understand. Anyway.
Well,
Sharia, you can marry a 12-year-old.
Oh, my God. So we're going to hear a song called Big Brother, and that one, I believe, might be worse than the title track, Young Girls, Big Brother. One has to go to the statutory rape heavy hitters like Gary Puckett or
Christine,
Ted Nugent.
16, yeah.
Or the Gene Simmonses to hear such vile thing. But
it's a
it was
filthy record.
It was a simpler time.
Mommy. It was.
But this song rocks. It's the best song on the record to me.
It's actually a good record.
Yeah, it's a really good record.
Mommy.
Please don't do that. Otherwise, I will not play it.
Look, one guy's looking out the blinds.
That would be me in that photo
Mommy,
shoot like
he's
this.
Looking
this is
out
fucked
the
up.
Blinds.
So let's talk about the Scooters a little bit. There's not a lot out there on these. I searched and searched today to find out some backstory, and this is what I came up with. These guys banged around the man. So let's play the record. Get your minds out of the gutter.
Get your mind off the Scooter.
Yeah. They banged around L.A. in the late 70s, early 80s and released two albums. This is the first one. And again, thanks, BJ. He sent this to us a few months ago. There's not a lot, again, on this band, but it's produced by Phil Wainman, who is known for producing Sweet and working with Chin and Chapman. And he also produced the band Mud, which is another glitter rock, stomping glitter rock band from the U.K., and the Bay City Rollers, same thing.
Yep.
Probably did some stuff with Gary Glitter, too, while he was at it.
Why not? Gary Glitter would do stuff with him.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. When punk arrived in the UK, he worked with Generation X, which, of course, Billy Idol,
yeah.
But it was not an experience he remembers with any fondness.
Or fondleness.
He says, quote, Billy Idol kept saying, "Do you think I'm going to make it?" I said, "Well, you're absolutely bloody talentless, but you look great."
Wow.
And he stamps it, star. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, things are looking
star.
Good for you. Yeah.
Gets a stamp out. Star.
The members of the Scooters are Larry Lee on bass, who's amazing on this record. The bass player guy on, man, really tight bass playing. Might be bass player night.
Right? So far.
Bobby Dean.
Man.
Bobby Dean Wicklund on drums, Luke Zamperini on guitar and vocals, and Robert Ferrara on vocals and guitars.
Everybody's name ends in a vowel, pretty much.
How do you pick up on such things?
I smoke a lot of weed.
Not Wicklund. That's a D. I don't know where you went to school.
A-E-I-O-U and sometimes D.
He's trying to be British and nothing ends in a vowel.
Wicklund.
Vowel.
So the drummer Bobby went on to play with Joey Mulland in his version of Badfinger. Yeah, in 1981, Badfinger had sort of like what Foghat did, where they had two Badfingers going around the country. Joey Mulland had one, and not Pete Ham, but who was the other guy? One of the other Badfingers. Yeah, one
I
of the other
the
fingers.
Middle finger.
It was index finger or middle finger, one of those two.
Ring finger.
So and then there's a credit in this Badfinger thing for Larry Lee, who, of course, was a bass player. But that link takes you to the guy that played guitar with Hendrix at Woodstock. There's another dude playing guitar on stage at Woodstock who's also named Larry Lee.
What?
Yeah.
What?
What?
Yeah, that's weird. How many Larry Lees can be out there?
How many? I never knew somebody else played guitar with Hendrix at Woodstock.
Oh, yeah. He's in whatever Hendrix was calling his band at that moment in 1969.
Larry Lee.
Band of Hendrix?
Yeah, it's another guitar player who's also wearing a bandana in the back playing a white SG.
No shit.
Yeah.
I need to watch Woodstock sober one day.
Now, why would you go and do a thing like that?
And I should probably put some pants on next time I watch it, too.
Right. So, yeah, I don't think it was the same Larry Lee that played with Woodstock, obviously, just based on the guy's age. But so Wikipedia is incorrect on that one. Because it can't
be. Everything on the internet is true, Ryan.
Oh, of course.
That?
Wikipedia especially.
Especially.
Dude, if you really want to, you can go to Wikipedia and change the speed of light to like 12 miles an hour until they catch it, you know?
That's true.
All right. Well, that's all I have on the Scooters other than this is a great song. It's probably about a 2-minute song that's
killer. It's a definitely power pop, kind of the punkiest song on the record. Definitely worth checking out. There's a great ballad that's very John Lennon-like on side two.
Does that guy look like Jay Leno to you?
That's what I said.
Yeah.
He does. He has that long jaw. And then it's like kind of John Stamos, and then...
Those guys are... Yeah. You find them attractive, right? You said they...
I was maybe talking out of my ass. When I
said that. Now that you've got a closer look...
So they could all be the age of my father now.
This 1980, so you got to figure.
I was three.
Probably born in 1960 or the late 50s.
You were three.
I was three.
Their kind of gal.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Really. Yeah. But I didn't have crimped hair, and I didn't look like Jomini Randy.
All right, AD. Why don't you drop the needle on Big Brother from the Scooters from the Young Girls album 1980 on EMI? It's track 2 on side 1, sir. And I love the hook in this song. I mean, not lyrically but let me run these down. I don't know, it's he doesn't want to be your big brother and he doesn't want to have mama's consent. I'm sorry, everybody.
This is a new low for me.
Welcome to Shabby Road.
All right.
Yeah, baby.
I have to take a shower.
No, you really could change that. You could change the lyrics to be a Christian song. I want to be your big brother. Come away with me.
To church.
Jesus loves thee. Come on. No, that's on, how everybody. I grew up. I grew up
But that would be a good
Christian.
Thing. You should probably tell your mother about that. That's not something you should probably hide from your mother.
Maybe not.
And I don't think you'd have to meet her on the corner for that either.
You could. I mean, there's people on corners with signs in New York City all the time. Anyway.
So the Scooters with Big Brother from the Little Girls album. Woo! And the look I got from the people here at Shabby Road is like I wrote it, like Ryan McKay.
You kind of want to pogo to it, and then you kind of look around to see who's looking that you're so happy to.
Well, wasn't that a great
this song?
It's a good song.
It's a great pop song.
It's
a great pop
song.
It will be in my head all day tomorrow and the next day, and probably at church on Sunday. So
I don't want to be your big brother. I don't want to be your. Damn, Ryan.
Everybody's going to have that song stuck in their head.
I'm going
to best place
it.
To stick it.
All right. AD, what you got?
All right. Well, I alluded to my European UK guy, and I alluded to my European German guys. And then I said that there is a band that blends the two.
Yes, and you've had
two countries in one. I think you know who it is. And as a matter of fact, serendipitous as it is, on Billingsgate, it would be Lucifer's Friend. Now,
that's
this
right.
album is not on Billingsgate.
Ooh.
I brought Mean Machine, Ryan.
Yes, this is the album when you brought Lucifer's Friend that you said this is from 82 or something.
This is 81. Now,
81.
Yep. You have their first album too now, right?
Their very first one?
Their first one came out in 70. I played one of their tunes, Ride the Sky, I think on episode 47.
Candidate for Song of the
Song
Year.
Song of the Year, mofos.
On the Shabby Awards, go to the website and vote.
Wow.
Shit is... Dude, how great is that
Although
record?
It's going to be tough to beat Roller Rink this year. Last I looked, Roller Rink was running away with it. So.
I think Roller Rink and what you just played are in categories unto themselves. We might need to make a whole new category for that. Perhaps. Come on, how great is that first Lucifer's Friend record?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Right?
I love that record.
It's one of those things, and I heard it when I was like 10, 12 years old.
Now
11, I think.
Now, this band goes through many changes, personnel changes, style changes, and returns to form in 1981 with this album?
Yes, with this album. This is their, I think, seventh. But, yeah, they started off with this heavy as fuck, the heaviest Deep Purple, the heaviest Sabbath, but pre-prog heavy Genesis. But it all made sense, and it was powerful, and the lyrics were just ripping. And I had that record. I'm like, Jesus, fuck, these guys are going to be huge. And then their next record came out. It was pretty good. It was an album, the Groupie album. It's
Groupies
Change Rock and Roll or something.
Yeah.
But it got a little softer, and I'm like, oof. I wanted to hear that first record again. A newer version of it, then go change. Put out a couple. Show that you're serious, right? Like, do that first one like a motherfucker. Do another one like a motherfucker and really throw it down. Then if you want to change and maybe make stylistic, progress or what do you call it? Darwin thing.
The evolution. Darwin,
the evolution, the Darwin thing. Apparently, I haven't done that. That's great, but then they went through like this really kind of they did sappy stuff. It got really weird to me.
I had a record called Mind Explosion.
Mind Explosion
I hated
was
it.
Horrible. That was I think the fifth record.
I threw it in the trash.
Right. I mean, no. So they did. They went through a lot of changes, but this record. It's their last one in their first batch of being together as a band. They got together in 1970 in Hamburg. Now, we were just talking about Hamburg. Right?
Hamburg.
Of course, like 100 miles. So you can't help but think that when they were coming out, them and the Scorpions and these guys did some of the same clubs, same venues, probably even did a bunch of shows together. Same era, 100 miles apart in Germany and mm-hmm. bands were touring and blah, blah, blah. But So this was their last album, per se, from the 1970 through 81 era, when they were a band. Then they split up. They got back together in 94 and put out one more record called Sumo Grip. Now, I want to find that record because apparently that's a pretty cool record. But this was John Lawton, of course, of Uriah Heep fame, latter-day Uriah Heep fame, mm-hmm. late 80s, mid-70s, I should say.
Wait, late 80s or mid 70s? What?
Late 80s or I'm sorry, early 80s or mid 70s, late 70s. Like, I think he did the Firefly record, right?
Okay.
77, right? When did Firefly come out, right?
That sounds right.
He did Innocent Victim. He did like three albums.
Post Wonderworld?
Post David Byron, Uriah Heep.
David Byron.
Circle of Hands.
I quit.
There she was on a July morning.
So great.
I don't really know what's happening.
Anyway,
right now,
Uriah Heep. We're doing David
I'm
Byron.
Okay.
So he did like three records in the 70s. So he started this band, Lucifer's Friend. He's from Great Britain, but the rest of the blokes. Or what do you call them? Comrades are German. So this John
that's Russian.
Clinton.
Whatever they call them. Deutsch Bros.
Clinton.
Deutsch Bros.
Yeah. Okay. So, let's go with
so
that.
So John Lawton, you know, he's working around, you know, England in the, you know, late 60s, and he's not getting any luck. So he moves to Hamburg, Germany, and joins these guys, starts this Hamburger.
Hamburg. It's Hamburg.
And he starts this band, yeah, you know, with these German guys. And it's Peter Hasslein, Peter Hecht, and Dieter Horns. Now, this is the original band. They went through some changes lineup personnel-wise, but they also went through some changes stylistically. And members came kind of and went kind of. But at the end of the day, this is the exact same band except for the drummer. Now, this is the only record this drummer did, this guy Herbert Bornhold.
Okay. I'm leaving
Burn
it alone.
Hole. Yeah.
I'm
it's
leaving
Gary
it alone.
Glitter,
I think we've been down that road before.
But this record, it kind of revisited their first record. They got heavy again.
Good.
You know, they kind of followed trends, and you know, and their fans were going, because dude, that first record, come on, you know.
Of course.
Oh, fuck me. And then, right, so that next
that
record
drop.
Comes out.
Ricky, get that drop.
Come on, yeah, right? Yeah, I mean, yes, and, yeah. then, and then the series of, and you're going, dude, and you're holding up the first record going, Lucifer's Friend, you guys.
You're going to have a great career.
Right?
But
what are you doing, right? So this one brings them back to their heavy days. I still don't think it's as heavy or as good from front to back as their first one is. But it's a good, really, really good, solid record. I'm going to play a song called Cool Hand Killer.
Ooh, okay.
And, of course, as all their records, produced by Lucifer's Friend. And maybe that's their problem. Maybe they should have, you know, they always produce their own stuff. So they didn't have anybody going, you guys, seriously.
I was
going
to say, could they rename their band, maybe?
Lucifer's Friend.
I like
well,
their okay. name.
Look, good little churchgoers like me were not going to be allowed to
listen
to that.
Yeah, but I mean, then you got this happy name called the Scooters, and what do they write about?
Yeah. True.
True.
Yeah.
That's, you could.
Can we just call it Lucifer's Scooters and
Lucifer's
call it a day?
Hey, hop on Lucifer's scooter, won't you? Let's go down to the playground.
I don't want to be your big
but,
brother.
But I mean, this this.
I just want to be your Lucifer friend.
Lucifer scooter. Oh. Take a ride. But this album, this is more reminiscent of, I think, the new wave of British heavy metal. Like,
okay.
It's got some Iron Maiden elements in there. It's got some sort of mid-era Rainbow vibe.
Ooh.
It's got some early, like, fucking jamming hardcore, really rocking dark Deep Purple in it.
Wet
so,
my wigs.
Right? You're sacked.
You're fired from Lucifer's Friend. This isn't even your band, Richie.
Then you're sacked.
You're
now
sacked.
It's my band.
Who is this that talks to me as if I care what he says?
So anyway, they do this record and now Lucifer's Friends fans are going, yeah, right on. Then they break up, you know?
Again.
Motherfuckers. So 13 years later, I told you about the Sumo Grip record. But he put together, John Lawton put together the original band after all those years. And they'll go, come on,
the original guys?
Let's fucking
Even the
make,
drummer?
Let's, well, no. It was different drummers. There's always the odd man out drummer guy. But it was, for the most part, the same guys, right? So 13 years later, they're going, fuck yeah. So they put this record out. Now, I don't have it. I want to find it. But it's supposedly pretty fucking good. So they did that, and then they split up again.
Get a spinal tap here.
Spinal tapping. So, but in 2014.
Oh, God, here we go.
Yes, we do.
They're
check
in
this
jail.
Out, though. John Lawton.
They're in jail.
John Lawton announced that the band were officially not interested in working together in the studio again. But they appeared at 2015 Sweden Rock.
Oh, man, I wish I lived in Sweden.
Dude, right? Right? We were
I'd
talking about
scene.
Dave Tedder was talking about taking us over there, Cross Street Kids.
Oh, yeah,
at one
ago.
Point in time, right? So guess who else appeared? Now, we're talking about bands who kind of went away and came back. At that Sweden Rock Festival, on those stages, that event was a newly reformed Lucifer's fucking friend, the original band. Ace Frehley, Mother's Finest got together and
played. No shit.
Glory Hammer.
Is that one of your films?
Yes, one of my, yes.
A showing of one of your films?
That going on?
I had the Joe Namath. You remember? I was going through my Joe Namath stage. I had the mustache and the pantyhose. but do you remember the Choir Boys? They played.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Choir Boys played. The Darkness got back together and played. These are all newly reformed bands. Michael Monroe and a couple of the guys from who? Hanoi Rocks got back together and played. And guess who else played?
Who?
Blah, 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 yeah.
Molly Hatchet.
Molly fucking Hatchet. And Phil called me from there going, hey, dude, you got to get down here. I'm like, dude, I'm in Arizona. You're in Sweden. Yeah, but you don't know, man. You got to see. He was going fucking freaking out. And it, I think Motley Crue headlined it or something that year. Quack, 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 quack.
Oh, whatever. Well, did Michael Monroe punch out Vince Neil? I hope so.
Yeah, I hope God. So. You know, somebody's got to. But anyway, I've got all but one of their records, and I'm gonna get Sumo Grip. This is Lucifer's Friend. This is rocking, dude. And
all right, let's put it on.
Then, John Lawton has gotten together with Roger Glover. He did the Butterfly Ball live at the Albert Hall. Remember that?
Yeah, that's recorded. Dio was there and everything. This was like 2010.
Ian Gillan, Twiggy, David Coverdale is there. Hey, Dave, wake Dave up. Hey, Dave, get up. Hey.
A.D. Adams as I live and breathe.
Hey, Dave, how you doing, buddy?
I am doing swimmingly, my sir. My liege. My landlord, actually,
You got a little sleep cake in your eye there, buddy.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I see there's a fine, buxom lady here. Who is this?
That's Dave. Leslie Spencer. David Coverdale, that's Leslie Spencer. Leslie Spencer,
hello.
David Coverdale.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
You're welcome.
I've got a Jaguar. Maybe you could crawl on the hood.
Does it have a car phone in it?
She has a scooter.
I do.
Is that so?
I've also got crimped hair and
now,
the kimono.
Now, why have you awoken me from my slumber, Mr. Adams, Marcus?
We were just talking about the Roger Glover's Butterfly Ball.
Dear friend of mine, Glover. We go way back in the day. I know we didn't play together, but in Purple, he'd long gone by then. But we did cross streams several times over the years.
So you did the thing with John Lawton, right? We were just talking about Lucifer's Friend and how they got back together. And
yes,
you guys had done that thing.
I loved his work in the Sex Pistols.
No. That's Johnny Lydon.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm very confused. I just woke up.
You still have some sleep cake in your eyes.
I love cake.
I love it too.
She's so young.
I love scooters. What is my role right now? I don't even. I'm scared.
So, but throughout the whole thing, sorry, Dave, to wake you up for this.
I'm going back to bed.
But so, I mean, throughout all this time, he and Ken Hensley are just bumping into each other.
Oh, hey, not Ken Hensley.
Like, it's like you and me, like this old married couple. Like, oh, hey, I'm playing with Louis Prima Jr. Oh, I'm playing with Louis Prima Jr.
Damn it.
Hey, I'm doing this recording session with Greg Chason. Oh, wow, I'm doing this recording with Greg Chason.
The old one-upper.
Yeah, no, it's we can't get away from each other. It's like every project you do, it's like, hey, so what are you doing this weekend? Well, I'm doing this gig out at Wild Horse Pass.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah, geez, really, Ryan?
Damn it.
You know, yeah.
Stop stalking me.
And so, yeah, he and Ken Hensley just were doing like, they did some South African tour, you know, that he runs into. He rejoins Uriah Heep in like 95 because some guy with the lead singer, Bernie Shaw, was sick. And they're backing up who? Deep fucking Purple, right? And then fast forward, you know, he's been teaming up with Ken Hensley. It's weird. This is weird, incestuous, almost like the Outlaws, Molly Hatchet. Leonard Skinner, they're all the same guys. And what band are you in today? Well, I'm doing a gig with Skinner this afternoon, and then I got to fly to LA and do a gig with the Outlaws. You know,
yeah,
and it's like,
right.
Who are you playing with? I'm doing Coverdale this evening, and I believe I'm doing Hensley tomorrow afternoon at a festival in Wales.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. So,
no.
So, now check this out. As recently as March 2010, he made his big screen debut in a Belgian, I believe it was a Belgian flick called Love.net, right?
Oh, boy.
Which starred Gary Glitter. No, but guess who? There was a special guest appearance by ex-Uriah Heep guitar player.
Mick Box?
Mick motherfucking Box, dude.
Wow.
So and he just...
I just saw a picture on Facebook of Mick Box and Ace Frehley. Arm in arm, like, yeah.
Well, they were Ace Frehley at the fucking Sweden Fest.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Sweden.
They were on that rock cruise yeah. thing, I think.
Oh, geez. So, I mean, it's funny how he just goes, I can't get away from these fucking bastards. You know, no matter where he goes, and it's Hensley or Mick Box. Mm-hmm. But you know what, man? John Lawton, he doesn't have, I don't think, a distinct voice like Coverdale does or Dio does or Ian Gillan does. But right. John Lawton has worked constantly. And he was even doing like commercial voiceovers and jingles in the 80s and 90s when he was in between these giant projects. And he's done with Lucifer's Friend, and now he's got work, steady work as a commercial voice guy.
No, yeah, there you
so
go.
He was, and he's doing great.
Diversify.
Yeah, so he's not one of these rich rock stars that crashed and burned. He's one of these guys that you heard of, went invisible underground, got his shit down, and worked his balls off, and he's doing great.
Well, good.
So here's to so you should be Lucifer's friend. Make friends with Lucifer,
yeah.
And I think
that's great.
Here's to working your balls off.
Yeah. I think
are we ready?
Yeah, let's go. Let's do this.
Where are we at here?
Let's go. I'm going to play Cool Hand Killer. As a matter of fact, Ryan, that's track five. Yeah, but there's a little like 1 minute like lead in sort of guitar thing, and that's actually called Mean Machine. So put that on too. It's like a minute.
We'll be right back.
That's some heavy shit. That was written by the whole band, produced by the whole band. But we were talking while it was rocking about the
influence.
Then came the Nazis around motherfuckers.
So for the listening audience, they're working on Krautrock the musical.
Hide on the gold and cover your asses.
Okay. All right.
When I was Elektra released in the U.S., Vertigo in the U.K. Come on, man. That's Mean Machine. That was the last solid body of work during that era. It's sort of the last before the reformation of Lucifer's Friend.
Well, it's very Rainbow. You said Rainbow, and boy, that is, I mean, right down to the interplay between the Moog Simplifier
right.
and the the guitar. Yeah.
But could you hear Dio singing that song?
That'd be awesome. Oh, well, Dio could sing the phone book. I mean,
or Ian
awesome.
Gillan, right?
Yeah.
Right? Ian Gillan singing. John Lawton's a great singer. He's a good singer. But I think I put him in the category of one of those, like, Graham Bonnet, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's just nothing there, really.
There's
nothing distinctive. It sounds like a number of dudes.
Jolynn Turner comes to mind, we were mm-hmm. talking about, right? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of those guys.
So, anyway, but that you know what? It's still a great fucking record.
I want to hear the rest of that record at some point. I'm
take it home with you.
Bart. All right, I will.
Well, Ryan, it's your turn, love.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I've got one of those bands that falls into the woulda, coulda, shoulda category. Again, I'm doing all power pop tonight. This is the oldest one from 1977 that I have. These guys...
Well, you went young last time, Ryan.
Yeah.
So...
Really young.
Yeah. Yeah. So they are a lot like Big Star in the fact that they put out a record. It didn't go anywhere, but then it becomes a collectible because it actually is a pretty damn good record, but it just didn't sell.
One and out? One and done?
This is actually their second record that comes out a few years later. I'm talking about a band called Blue Ash.
Oh, okay.
There it is, and an album called Front Page News.
Oh, I don't know anything about that. Let me see that. What's that guy do?
Blue Ash. Yeah. There's a Big Star kind of thing, because if you think about the history of Big Star, they had the number one record that came out, which is one of my favorite records, maybe a top 20 record of all time, that sold nothing when it came out. And then as years went by, it became sort of influential, especially in like the power pop thing because of its age, being in 72 or something like that is when it came out.
Okay.
And that's what Blue Ash did. Blue Ash also put a record out in 1972 that came and went with little or no fanfare. And
they're from where?
They're actually from Cleveland, Ohio.
The album cover's interesting because it looks like they're on a large screen TV laughing and like, woohoo, that was a great show, you know?
Yeah.
Amongst like a burning city. Yeah, like all hell's breaking loose around them, and they're doing an interview.
Right.
They've got great jeans on. Yes. If it's going to be a Gap ad, it might as well be Blue Ash.
Right. It's almost like a Gap ad on a billboard.
Yeah.
While the city is burning around them.
Right. Yeah. It's very strange, right?
And then there's like this whiskey ad in the background. That's funny.
Of course.
Sorry.
I love it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Ohio. They formed in 1969. And by 1970, they were touring relentlessly all around. Not only Ohio, but Pennsylvania, New York, West Virginia, and the like, and writing a ton of music. And then they got a production contract with a small label in Youngstown, Ohio. I think it was called like Peppermint Productions
now, that's
or something.
Iggy's era, that's...
70, 71.
Yeah, right? I mean,
right
when
in
they,
there.
Right? And MC5 and, mm-hmm. and bands like
there's
that.
There's a small Iggy and the Stooges connection with these guys, actually.
There ought
Playboy
to be.
Playboy Records as well.
Yeah, I know. Playboy Records, 1977.
Oh, really?
Well.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a
sex out.
So these demos that they make in Youngstown, Ohio, and end up, you know, they're shopping them to different labels, and they end up getting signed by Mercury Records. And in 1972, their first album comes out called No More, No Less. And like Big Star, it received rave reviews in the press, but it didn't sell. And they toured with the Stooges, and there's your connection for Iggy. They toured with Iggy and the Stooges. They toured with Bob Seger. They toured with Aerosmith and Ted Nugent. And none of that was enough to help them
sell that first record despite having all these great reviews.
Sure are a friendly bunch. Every photo of the band, they're like, hey, guys. They're all smiling. Hi.
I love being in Blue Ash.
Yeah, I'll babysit your kid.
Yeah.
You know? And they're nice looking kids.
The inner sleeve is cool with the lyrics in it, and it's like a paper.
Yeah.
The album's called Front Page News, so it's a paper.
But
not
they're
unlike,
all smiling and just happy to be there.
It's a Gap ad.
It's a fun.
Yes.
It's a
Playboy Records.
Yeah. If I was on Playboy Records, I'd be smiling.
Yeah, really. Oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah. So they toured and toured on this first album, but it didn't sell very well, and it just wound up in the dustbins. Became a collector's item years later, but Mercury's not in the business of making collector's items. They're in the business of selling records.
Guys?
So they were dropped in 1974 by Mercury. And then they floated around for a couple years and landed a deal with Playboy Records. Yes, Playboy had a record label. That's how, I mean.
That's why I apologize for trumping you, but.
No, that's okay. No. Interesting. You know, it floundered a lot. It never really took off, Playboy Records.
I had no idea that there was.
I didn't either. And I'm reading that. I'm like, I take that record out of the sleeve.
Actually, history of Playboy says
that. Here we go.
Well, remember Penthouse. No, man.
I don't have all night.
Penthouse Magazine came out. And then Playboy was the king of the. Boner Hill, king of the stack, so to speak. But remember, Penthouse came out and they were showing like full on fucking Bush.
Wait, we're talking about records.
Right. No, we're talking about the magazine, the Enterprise, yes, Playboy, Hugh Hefner, and there's money. And records, large labels, and they go, we got it when they tried Playboy After Dark, the television show. They had to burn money. They were hemorrhaging dough. They had write offs.
Records, do they?
Right. No, but I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah,
they were starting to branch out into other media.
I think it was mismanaged. I think it was something like Playboy was a very large enterprise in the 70s.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
They opened up the record label division of Playboy in the early 70s, but I think it was just mismanagement.
Well, they were getting clobbered by Penthouse. I mean, they were first and foremost a publication.
Okay, but what I read about Playboy Record specifically was that it wasn't successful, and there was management changing every year. Mm-hmm. Not unlike that's pretty typical for record labels, right? Like
cocaine.
Yeah. So I think was it Mickey Gilley was the only Mickey Gilley was a successful artist on Playboy Records, believe it or not. A country singer was probably one of the only names that you heard of.
When did it peter out? Do you know?
Peter out.
So, I'll tell you when it petered out. This Blue Ash record comes out in 1977. Playboy Records folds in 1978.
Oh. And that's why they're smiling. They didn't know him anymore.
Yeah. So their bad luck continued, Blue Ash, because, they were... I mean, once it closed and some of the catalog was bought out by Elektra, but I mean, by then that record just got nothing. It had a single. The first single that comes off of the record was a regional hit in some markets. But by the time the record comes out, it wasn't a few months later that Playboy's like, fuck this. And like you said, AD,
we're going into porn.
They're hemorrhaging money and stuff like that. And so they're like, well, we need to shrink. So let's get rid of the record label that's not really turning a profit and get rid of probably many other things.
That's a shame.
So these poor guys are just left, nowhere.
But look how happy they are. Look,
they are happy. And this is a cool, fun record. It's got some raspberries type of stuff on it. You know, they do the mid-tempo-y kind of thing.
So every once in a while, yeah. Right.
Oh, that kind of raspberry.
You're such a boy right now.
I went
now.
There.
You're just a he little, is... like, six-year-old boy, not even a 12-year-old. Six.
So they had raspberry. Baby. Great guitar solo.
My God.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So they've got that. They've got the big ballads. They've got rockers. With the one I'm playing is one of the rocker ones, The Boy Won't Listen, which is your biography here, AD. Because it's about a kid in school that won't listen to anything, but he like draws guitars and stuff. Yeah. Finally, he gets a rock and roll record, and then he's super focused on stuff. So it's kind of like an ADD kind of kid that everybody's kind of going, oh, man, this kid's not going to amount to anything. The boy won't listen. He won't listen. And then finally he gets into music. And so, AD's getting emotional. It's my life story. It's a rock and roll thing. I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit of The Who in the verse. But then you'll hear it's got a cool chorus in it. And strings, like lots of kind of Mark, think T-Rexy type of
who
strings.
Who produced this? Who's the producer on this one?
Oh, I didn't write that name
Hugh
down.
Hugh Hefner.
Oh, well done.
He's the reproducer.
Yes.
Oh,
ew.
No.
Ew.
No.
Like a bunny, if
How
you know what I'm saying.
How much money would it take for you, Leslie, to be one of Hef's wives?
Never.
Never.
I've been married once. I will not do that again.
You never?
I don't think so.
Not Hef? You don't want to live at the Playboy Mansion with 12 other...
I don't want STDs. I'm sorry.
In the grotto? God knows what's floating around in there.
In the grotto. Oh,
there's more DNA in that grotto.
It's a cesspool. Yeah.
I'll do a record, though. Playboy Records.
Hey, let's fire it back up.
But they're a three-piece band. Oh, that's why I was curious. I mean, they got the strings.
They are. There's the two guitar player singer dudes and the bass player. There's no drummer listed or credited. And if you look on... I looked all over that insert.
It's a German drummer.
The
guy named...
Hugh Hefner!
Yeah, this guy named... This German drummer named... Yeah.
That's you always leave your play as you go around.
I can't get it to start, and then I can't get it to stop.
That's the story of your life. All right, well, that's all I have on Blue Ash. I mean, that first record, you can find it. It's about $30.
Well, I was asking,
that's really good too. And I believe there's a lot of that stuff on iTunes and stuff, where you can pick it up there too.
Where did you hear about these guys? I asked you earlier about
there
that.
There was a list that I want to say Rolling Stone put out of the top 10 albums from the 70s you've never heard of. And the Blue Ash record, the first one, found its way onto this. Onto this list. And then Steven Seaborg had this record in his collection, and I was very excited to get my hands on that because I heard so much about the first album. And this
wasn't in our trade pile, Ryan.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I passed this up.
You passed it up. We actually listened to it and you went, I hate this, or whatever. Turn this off. Blue Ash sucks.
Really?
But you got to listen to it a few times. There's some good stuff in it. And it's a fun record.
Happiest fucking band I've ever seen.
They are happy.
The three happy pictures of these guys.
Yeah. But let's first song on site 2 AD. Let's go ahead and drop the needle on some Blue Ash.
Listen.
Yeah, that was Blue Ash from Front Page News album on 1977 on the Great Playboy Records. What are those meetings like at that office at the Playboy Mansion or what?
All right, here's what I'm going to do.
Where do you sign your contract?
I just want to make a record. That's all I want to do.
Cup them, honey. Cup them.
tape your breasts together. Yeah. We're going in to meet Hef. All right. All right, so the mystery boxes are empty, AD. So we have come to the end of our Shabby Road Record Show. We want to thank everybody for hanging out here with us tonight. And here comes Anthony Newley to sing us out.
Yes!
He's back. Oh, I love this. This is awesome.
The Bolds.
Let's thank Leslie Spencer for coming all the way from New York City to hang out with us. You can catch her singing with the Louis Prima Jr. Band anytime. Visit louisprimajr.com. And also Brian Setzer.
Yes,
right?
This is right.
She is one of the Vixens.
LeslieSpencer.net.
LeslieSpencer.net, thank you.
Just want to stalk me and
yes.
ride my scooter.
Leslie, ooh, wow. LeslieSpencer.furryhandcuffs.
And amen.
Dot scooter.
And thanks to Ricky Serrano for manning all those Macs over there. Including the lovely and talented HAL 5000.
It's so lonely at the top of Olympus.
Yes, it is.
More women! More wine! More!
Wow.
Such a long, long drop there.
What? There's a cacophony of, I don't know if this is happening or disturbing to me. Okay. Is this happy stuff? Is this
speaking of happy, happy birthday to Liz.
Happy birthday!
It's birthday.
Our liquid mistress. Thank you very much, Liz, for hanging out with us on your birthday. What a fun night. Hope you had a good time. And all the rest of you guys, say goodnight.
We got G-Man over there. We got Jimmy Durden. We got Mark Brooks. We got Robert Perez back here. We got a house full, man.
And we got you guys for listening. Thank you so much. Episode 73 is in the books. And thanks for sharing everything and visiting us on Facebook and the website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com and all that stuff. Leave iTunes reviews, the Amazon.com link where you can help us keep the lights on here at Shabby Road.
I can't see if that's you over there or is that a topless Adrian Barbeau? I can't see through the fog.
Well, it's a topless something.
The swamp. The oh, it's a pantsless Ryan McKay.
Indeed it is, sir. Indeed it is, sir. And I'm looking across the room and I'm seeing a man who is in love with the boards. He can't get off of the boards.
He would rather die in makeup than wake up a clerk.
That's right. Mr. A.D. Adams, everybody.
Thank you so much, Leslie, for doing this with us, for being here.
This is really fun.
Every
Thank
minute
you.
With you is
Thank
a fucking
you.
Trip, man.
I love you. I love you.
Oh, I love you.
Oh, Sheldon.
Oh, Myrtle.
Oh, you
Making
too.
Making love to you is like fucking a cold bowl of sand.
I'm so proud.
Thank you, and good night. We'll see you on 74.
The music was perfect. The boards! Yeah, thank you.